And we are a go. So this is season 2, episode 5, Regent. Of course, this takes place in the wake of the battle at Rook's Rest. And they kick open with the... Oh my God, I've forgotten the name of the dragon already. Maelys. Right, I'm going to get... Is the dragon index the one I should be bringing up? So this episode, it's one of those aftermath of the battle episodes. I do kind of, in some ways, feel it got a bit unfairly rated on that, on the basis of that, because I thought there were some good, really nice moments in this episode, and we got to see more of Westeros.
Like, I wasn't dissatisfied by this episode. Like, I didn't think it was bad. I think obviously there was a lot of it was a fallout episode. So you have kind of like the build up episodes, you have the like event episode, and then you have the kind of fallout conclusion. And this was a lot of fallout with not that much build up towards what's happening next.
Mm-hmm.
So it felt like it wasn't. It was kind of it was reactions rather than progression in terms of an episode, which is not as naturally engaging as the setup or the payoff episodes. And we've just had a massive payoff episode where all of the things that have been threaded throughout the first couple of episodes really came to a head and literally resulted in a dragon head.
Yeah. And so Aemond is the regent now. And I think that there were a lot of Aemond scenes I was quite enjoying. Do we reckon Aegon's going to make it? I think Max probably knows.
Yeah, like I said, they keep changing things and combining things because in this episode, they pretty clearly, I thought, said that Sunfire was dead.
Yes. Right?
Yes,
that is not the case in the book, at least at this point, that Sunfire is barely alive, but still very much so. Like, he can't fly, or he can't fly. The dragon is alive and plays a role in the future of the story, so I don't know if it's a fake out that they're saying Sunfire is dead, or if they're really changing that.
It could be a fake out, but I mean, Kristen Cole only mentioned it the once, and he said Sunfire was long in the dying, but we haven't seen a body, we haven't seen anything
We haven't seen an on-screen body, it will be strange to have lied about its death, but it would be really strange. Like, I feel like a living dragon is important.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand changing it if they wanted to give, like, if Sunfire didn't die in the books, it kind of undercuts Rhaenys's sacrifice, because that was one of the really good retorts in this, is that, you know, Rhaenys went alone against two dragons, and even, like, with her skill, she was actually able to slay one of them and harm the other, despite the fact that she was one against two. So I understand if they wanted to give her more of an earned hero's death rather than, like, if Sunfire survives, it kind of means that her sacrifice is a little bit hollow.
That certainly makes a lot of sense. Because if Rhaenys had just died in battle, it would have just been a straight up loss.
The other thing as well is because we're looking, the showrunner's perspective is showing us, as far as we are aware, unless there is, you know, an over, like, unless they put a lampshade on it with some sort of Samwell Tarly in the last episode, Sitch. The assumption is what we're watching is the objective truth of this world, as far as we're able to translate it. And so it kind of makes, if we're being shown things that the books didn't show us, like the fact that in this case, Aemond was kind of deliberately trying to harm Aegon, which I'm assuming isn't something from the books. I'm assuming
not,
that wasn't implied. So it kind of, they have to show Sunfire being sacrificed to give Rhaenys some agency in that. Otherwise, because they're giving Aemond this subplot of wanting to become the king and wanting to be the regent, that would undercut Rhaenys' sacrifice even more if they didn't have some level of actual win. Does that make sense?
I can't make up my mind what the House of the Dragon plot line is, whether or not it is an objective truth, whether or not it's completely separate, like a whole separate universe entity from the books in practice. I don't know the level of the unreliable narration, but like you say, maybe we'll get a lampshade on it at the end. But
Yeah,
even
we might get
then,
up, but from what the way that I'm interpreting it is, obviously the way that the books are written is because they've run so many different specific, clearly non-objective perspectives. The way that this show is being presented, at least, is this is the truth of it. This is the real truth with the real motivations and the real characters, and then the retelling is the book as such. So I don't see a reason why the facts as they're seen would necessarily be different, unless it's like a character perspective scene, like all the stuff with Daemon. Because Daemon's whole shtick is so, like, what's been happening in the last 3 episodes now? It's been going on for ages. Obviously, completely messes with what we're perceiving because his perception is completely broken.
I kind of like what they do. A lot of people say it's dragging a bit, but I really kind of like the Daemon bits. I didn't think I would, or I thought I'd get bored of them sooner. But part of it is I'm a
I gotta
bit of a
be
sucker.
honest, that part, it's starting to bore me a little bit.
It's yeah, I know a lot of people are finding that, but I
Get
kind
what
of
they're doing.
I like that
I'm
we're in Harrenhal.
trying.
Like, I feel that in a lot of
Yeah,
places, like, you don't get to, like, I feel like our Harrenhal being such a central part of so many things, and we haven't seen Game of Thrones that much to, okay, there was like in, was it season two or something, Arya was brought in with Tywin Lannister at Harrenhal there. But I kind of like the idea that we're seeing Harrenhal as the sort of the haunted castle that it's known as, and we're seeing the fuckery that goes on there in the wearing down of his character. I quite liked the bit where he's trying to get the Brackens and the Blackwoods together, and he's got the is it the Bracken there, the guy in yellow, and he's like, you know what, do your worst, mate. I choose fire. And then Damon, the next scene was Damon's like, shit, he called our bluff, man, didn't he? Shit.
I
I
do find
wasn't
it a little bit of a I think the trouble with it is they're trying to put so much in his head, but the way that they're presenting it is a little bit, it's interesting because what they're showing from the character perception is so clearly disjointed from reality. It's very hard to understand how Daemon is even functioning, to even have conversations and is somewhat coming off as coherent, and no one has gone, wow, there is obviously the group of people he's interacting with don't necessarily know him, so it's hard to know if they would be able to anticipate that he's acting unusually. But from the nature of the hallucinations that we as the audience have seen, and the way that he's completely disassociating time and space and whom he's talking to and the context of whom, he was hallucinating about having sex with his mum while having a conversation over the dinner table, and somehow no one thought that that was strange behaviour. And so I
I
think it'll be interesting in the
was
next episode
confused by that part.
when the guy that Rhaenyra is sending to Harrenhal goes and sees Daemon, hopefully he knows Daemon well enough to be like, oh, you're infected with mold, or you've been poisoned, or you're something's wrong, so that we can have an objective perspective from someone who knows him. Because I don't understand how the other lords, other than knowing that he's kind of an erratic rebel, wouldn't think something wrong with this guy. He's losing, like, he's clearly not focused, losing time with this
Well,
chess.
the thing is, right? So we know, like, the sort of the interesting character of this piece is Alice Rivers, the Woods Witch lady. And she sits at the table with the rest of the house, right? So as a strong bastard, they seem to treat them like it. I don't know. It just seems to be the case that the Strongs seem to just like they
Seems
seem
in
good
their
on the,
stride.
yeah, like they, I don't know, they seem to be good at keeping up with child support, should we say, right? Like they're not discarding them, they're not sticking them in the fighting pits like certain other, ne'er-do-wells, right? They, if they tomcat about, at least they sort of account for it, right? So that's assuming that Alice Rivers is about a strong bastard. She might just be a bastard from
Think
any
she
other.
is.
It's
I'm pretty
implied,
sure
right?
she is.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and it would be kind of strange to, well, I don't know, but yeah, like so she's sitting at the table with the rest of the lords and all that kind of stuff. She knows exactly what's going on because she asked, "How's your mum?" in after that dream, right? It's like, so she, I think they must know that
well.
Alice Rivers is a woods witch who's fucking with the king. So they're probably like, even if he is a bit incoherent, if he is drifting in and out of consciousness or whatever, they're probably kind of prepared for it. I mean, they live in a haunted castle, right?
I
They
mean,
know
again,
what's going on.
this will be interesting to see when Rhaenyra's envoy turns up, whether or not he either notices something wrong with Daemon and thinks that everyone's just been naive to his character and just didn't realize that, like, obviously Daemon's got a reputation for being aggressive, erratic, improvising and not really thinking things through. So it'll be interesting to know whether or not either it's them just not knowing him and thinking that, it's war, it's extreme, he's the rebel prince, he's just being a rebellious, slightly disjointed human being, or whether or not when the envoy arrives, he's going to be like, oh, this is a conspiracy. These guys all know that Daemon's being fucked with, and like he's clearly under the influence of something, and all of these guys are clearly involved. But, like, I kind of want an objective, like, it was interesting to begin with to see it from his eyes, but the way that it has been presented is so cerebral and nonsensical that I kind of have lost track of, like, it's great that we're in his mindset, but equally I just don't understand how he's functioning. I don't understand why. Like, I want to kind of see an outside perspective on how he's behaving that isn't a cool witchy lady or someone who's potentially either condoning it or part of the conspiracy. That makes sense. That's what's
Well,
frustrating me a little bit with the story, and that's why it feels like it's dragging
I
a little
suppose
bit for me.
the closest bit thus far is the bit where they woke him at the hour of the wolf, and he was basically, given a dressing down. They were like, "The you basically gave the green light for the Blackwoods to just do their worst, like."
They gave him a dressing down, but is that, like, again, because those people don't know Daemon specifically, like they could be running off his reputation as the rebel prince who ran off with the whore to Dragonstone and stole an egg, and his King's Guard were off mutilating people. Like, a lot of, I think, the themes that are going to start coming into play over the next couple of episodes, particularly we've had the whole Missaria Rhaenyra conversation in this episode about, spreading rumors and, like, using the kind of the superstitions of the small folk to try and rally perceptions to their cause. Like, there's more than one way to fight a war. It's not just battle, that is also winning the hearts of the people or winning the fear of the people against your enemies.
Okay,
If
so
Daemon has been around for what, 20, 30 years of being a rebel, he's been, a bad boy, a, dangerous knight. And these guys are like, oh, well, he's war has happened, he's finally got what he wants to go kill and carnage. They're accusing him of war crimes, which he has been accountable for, but they're accusing him entirely on his own, like, history, not necessarily on his current mental state. And I would be interested to see whether or not someone who knows him well enough to know that that rebellion stuff was always calculated, to see whether or not when they see him in this circumstance, to be like, this is not normal.
It was interesting for him to say to the Blackwood guy that he gave that deliberate ambiguity, right, which was kind of almost what felt like was happening with Blood and Cheese, which is, set the direction of where you want it to go, but like be vague enough that you've got a degree of plausible deniability, right? Oh, that's the plan. Maybe it didn't work this time. It doesn't seem to have worked this time. I'm actually, you mentioned it just then, Jenny. The Masa I'm interested in the final scene with Masario. Is it Masario? Masaria? Where she sort of sent the handmaiden down to King's Landing, and snuck in, and she then met with the woman that was raped by Aegon, and also then served him in the pub. Do we think that she is on the, like, I know that it's somewhat implied that she might be there to be in some kind of like PR, like maybe spread some rumors or do some sort of espionage or something, but my suspicion is that she is there to find the dragon seeds. She's there to find the Hugh the Hammer guy. She's there to find maybe I mean, maybe that woman that she saw at the end of the scene, maybe she's a dragon seed, maybe she's the nettles, but like, a bit of a bait and switch. Maybe it's like that little blonde kid that was in the dragon pits that we saw in the first season. Am I missing one? Oh yeah, Ulf. He's, the guy that claims to be a dragon seed, right, as well. So I think what we might end up in the next couple of episodes is trying and trying some of these bastards out on the back of a dragon, right? Do you think? Hang on a minute. Have I sat on the mute button again?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Oh,
I can
okay.
hear you.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I sat on the mute button, sorry.
No worries.
I'm sorry
Yeah,
about the video overlap then at some point. But yeah, it makes sense that the people who will be able to track down the a specifically Aegon's bastards would be his previous victims of assault and the underlings who work kind of in the dirt roads. I hadn't thought about that, but I just assumed that I put down in my very hurried notes because I didn't get a lot of time this week. The Missaria Rhaenyra burn book where they're just starting bitchy rumors about that lot. But like I assume that that was the case, but it's actually a really good argument that they're actually looking for like team green bastards to convert over to their side rather than necessarily searching for team black bastards. Because my assumption from their initial conversation was obviously they were going to look for people who married out of the line or looking for like legitimate Targaryens but had kind of been lost as part of the conversation between her and Jace. But actually looking for proper bastards, it kind of makes more sense to look in King's Landing than it does on Dragonstone because most of the Targaryen royals have been in Dragonstone, so the bastards are more likely to be scattered that far afield. I hadn't thought of that. I like that. That concept.
It has to be because the signaled dragon seeds are in King's Landing, so they've got to pick them up. Obviously, they're talking about
Equally.
the Malisters and stuff. They that's clearly like the. I mean, it would be the first place you look, and also like having another like High Lord on a dragon is less of an affront to the status quo than having just a straight up bastard. Like that would be that would be a more extreme measure. So I don't even know if we'll see that. I don't know how accelerated that plot will be, because they might even end up trying a few times in order to try and see who fits on. They might try and stick a couple of Malices on, and they all get burnt to a crisp. And they go, "Well, let's give the bastards a go, because, why not?"
Might as well.
Because you might be
Yeah.
onto something.
I mean, I'd be interested as well as in terms of the spy network that is available from the blacks in King's Landing. An ex, like someone who looked after the baby Targaryens, who was a nursemaid in the in the Red Keep. Regardless of whether or not it's rumor milling or trying to hunt down the bastards, having her as a spy contact would be very, very useful, because obviously she has an emotional dislike for the Greens because of horrendous SA, and her treatment by Allison. But also, she then has very intimate knowledge of the god of the king's household of the Red Keep. So, yeah, having her as a part of the spy network, Missandei's spy network, is a very useful tool. I remember, no, I didn't make the connection. She was the nursemaid from the first season until Lucius Fex pointed it out. But I did remember when I watched it the first time being like, this is, they're really paying attention to this character, even though she's only in a couple of shots. Why is she so familiar? So I'd be interesting to see what she does with the character as a throwaway character from the last season. I'd be really interested to see whether or not they really you like she's got a lot of utility as a character, and so I'd be interested to see what choices they make with her, whether or not it is Witchy Burn book, just spy networking, or hunt down the bastards, or all three.
Quite possibly. Actually, I'm just looking through the episode now. There was quite an amount of time dedicated to Daemon. It wasn't like a
Oh,
check-in
it was a
episode.
yeah. So, like, he had multiple hallucinations, including the one with his mum, and that was a little bit more than I was expecting. But again, the Targaryen spaghetti that is the incest family tree. I'm not shocked. There's a little bit of absolutely blatant. What's the word for the opposite of the electrocy in your
Oedipus, Oedipal,
Oedipus,
Oedipal.
there we
Oh
go.
yeah. It got very Oedipusy, didn't it?
Very Oedipusy. Like they had all of that, and then they had obviously the war crimes. And again, I don't know how much his like very like it was interesting to have Daemon kind of verbalizing some of the stuff that we've kind of guessed about his character, that's been implied about his character, but because he's in such a strange mental state, the irony that he's finally saying, like, yes, I want the crown and I will go to King's Landing and I will be the count, I will be the king, and then Rhaenyra is welcome to join me as my wife, but I will have the power, which we've kind of suspected that might be what he wants, but it's never been vocalized. The fact that he's vocalizing it when his mental state is so amorphous and unfixed is a really way of like double bluffing the truth of the matter. Like, is he actually thinking that? Is his guard just lowered by the fact that he's under the influence of magic or drugs or mold or whatever it is? Or is that actually, or is he just so out of it that he's just spewing, classic edgelord nonsense?
I my suspicion, if it's a Occam's razor kind of thing, would be that he does want the crown. He is going to sort of play the patriarchal advantage insofar that he'll marry Rhaenyra, and
He
he'll
wants
be
there to
like,
be.
it'll be like the sister wives, queens, but the reversal equivalent, right? So and then he's kind of hoping that, he'll sort of default by being the man to being the de facto main ruler, or something to that effect. But if I was to be charitable to him, and I don't think this is the case, but if I was to be very charitable to him, I could say he's presenting himself as the king because he is sort of taking advantage of the patriarchal aspect there by, like, getting people, well, bend the knee to me, I'm a king. It's a bit more status quo rather than bend it to a queen on the other side of the country. So he might just be playing up his kingliness for clout, I guess, might be. But that would
I
be
mean,
very forgiving there.
equally, it could be like a more petty reason behind it. You know, he had that fight with Rhaenyra. He's butthurt about his brother loving her more than loving him. Like that also kind of goes hand in hand with the Oedipus scene. Like he has a lot of resentment towards his brother for choosing her over him. And so it could just be petty kind of like lashing out because he doesn't know how to emotionally digest. So if like again, I'll be interested as to what Rhaenyra's envoy says to him and what reaction he has to that, because she sent the message like, we want to finish this conversation, and the conversation she had with him was, I don't trust you. Now he's obviously heard about Rhaenys and her dragon being felled. But we still haven't actually had his reaction to knowing that there was an attack, like an assassination attempt on Rhaenyra. We don't really know what his reaction to that is. And given how much time we've spent with him, I'm assuming the message has been passed on. But we haven't seen his reaction, or he has heard and he's lost time or disassociated from it, or he's not been told. And I'd be, again, I just want to see his reaction to that because I think that'll be very telling as to whether or not his current power goals are you know, just rebound anger from the argument and from feeling butthurt about his brother, or whether or not it really comes from a place of genuine want.
My suspicion would be that he was deliberately omitted from knowing that. I suppose I don't know what the economy of ravens is, right? Because it's like, well, how is it expensive to send a raven? Is it like, how many do you have? Can you just send a raven like an email? Or is it like you save them for special occasions? But could it be the case that Rhaenyra doesn't want Daemon to know that she was assassin there was an attempt made on her life because it would make, I don't know, because of the effects that it might have?
I
Maybe
mean,
he's.
it could be that she hasn't sent the word. It could be that he hasn't received the word. It could be that he has received the word, but his mental state isn't that he hasn't remembered it. Or it could be if we've got this full Harrenhal conspiracy where he's being poisoned and the guys around him are like, yeah, you know, he's completely nuts and, you know, out of his mind, but, you know, we'll keep kind of coddling him until he really duns fucks up and then hopefully get him ousted. Whether or not they're also keeping messages from Rhaenyra. It'll be interesting if he has, because as far as I'm trying to remember, have we had him say something like, I've not heard from her, or, you know, if she doesn't want to talk to me, I won't talk to her? Is he under the impression that she's not reached out?
I don't think so. I, to be honest,
I'm trying to remember.
I think she's for the most part out of his mind, like out of mind. I think I
I
don't.
think they're both sort of out of each other's minds. They're sort
Yeah.
of like,
They've got
oh,
other things
they're
to
off
worry
over
about.
there doing their thing. I'm going to
Yeah.
do my
Who will reach
thing.
out first? Like, I think maybe it's like, you know, when we've got two immovable, like an immovable object and like an unstoppable force, they're both kind of waiting for the other one to concede and say, what's happening? Are you okay? And obviously she's made that first move. She's sent an envoy to be like, dude, are you all right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is also like hesitancy on Rhaenyra's part because she probably doesn't want to be seen as being too reliant on Daemon. Like, she's probably looking at this as like an opportunity of saying, it's good that he's not here because it means I can stand on my own
I
two
can,
feet without
yeah, I
the
can get my own credit for my own work.
sort of thing. Yeah. And
But
also
also,
he,
like, she said that he's unreliable, so
yeah.
she's trying to genuinely be self managing and self sufficient.
I think we all really know that Damon and people like Damon are generally best kept at an arm's length at the best of times, right? So I
Very
don't,
true.
yeah, I think she's more interested in the army that he's trying to raise than anything else.
I do have to say I love Caraxes. Every time Caraxes was on screen, I'm like, I love the danger noodle. I just like so weird looking, and he makes such fun chirpy noises. And like he like you know he's getting lots of snack. His snack is people who can say no to Damon, and so he gets a lot of snack. And I'm happy for him. He's just so weird looking.
One of the things I really did like about this episode is that we saw two areas that we haven't seen yet. Or, well, basically, we see the Eyrie,
The Aryan.
particularly the castle and the twins. And I quite enjoyed both of those scenes. I really, to be honest, the one with Jace at the twins kind of had a bit of a Lord of the Rings kind of feel about it.
Yeah, I think the costumes, something about the costumes and the way that it was quite formal and quite
Formal, but
stately.
in a really like fantastical kind of way. Because they met, they were doing their meeting at the midpoint on the bridge. Like, obviously that's not practical. It's ceremonial or very cinematic, and I loved it. But I, to be honest, I thought that whole scene was just delightful, really. I like Jace's like, trying to prove himself, and he had like he was like, growing
There
into
was the
this
right
swagger.
amount of like cockiness, genuine confidence, and also that little undercurrent current of like, I don't really have the authority to make these bargains, but I'm gonna do it anyway.
Yeah, and I liked the phrase. They looked like when they were making the deal, they looked at each other and goes, and they almost it was almost a bit like it's like I like the cut of this kid's jib, he's got moxie this one, because it kind of was a bit like that, right? Like it's like he was kind of like yeah, like I don't know, the vibe was good. I'm actually really liking Jace's character. I thought he'd be bland as hell, to be honest, at the beginning of the series,
I mean,
but
he's really been good this season.
yeah.
it's interesting that he's kind of being presented as like in like obviously we've talked about how his dad, Mr. Strong, was just likable. He was likable and he was kind and he was affable. People enjoyed him, his presence. And they're kind of presenting Jace as this, like, he's the more approachable Targaryen. He doesn't look like a Targaryen. He looks like one of, he looks, in a way, he kind of is benefiting from his bastardy because he looks like one of the old, like he's the seed is strong through the strong family. He has the blood of the old, the first men in him because of his bastard heritage. And so he kind of has this approachability. And so I really enjoy the fact that they're kind of playing into the fact that he is a bit more of an emissary, a bit more of a politician, and has got some natural charisma that is actually, if Rhaenyra is going with the battle of like forming allies and actually doing the more political side of things and talking about like she's looking for peace, she's speaking. We talked about at the end of when we talked about the end of season one, how the Greens are going for a very militaristic wartime political message. They're going with like Aegon the Conqueror, Aegon with the Conqueror's crown, and Aegon with the Conqueror's armor, and they've got their dragons and they're being aggressive. While Rhaenyra was wearing her
Viserys,
grandfather's.
and
Yeah,
then
her grandfather's crown,
Jaehaerys,
crown,
yeah.
Harris's crown, which is the peacekeeper, the diplomat, the one who did
Conciliator.
the, Yeah, the conciliator, all of those sort of things. And she's the one who's trying to fight a war at the moment as much as she can through like litigation and through conversation and drawing in allies and trying to do these com like she it's an interesting way of doing it, because obviously we're trying not to draw lines between the blacks are good and the greens are bad. But they are definitely trying to make Rhaemira is the heroine of the story, as far as I can tell,
Seems
and
to
she's
be,
being
yeah.
presented as bad. And it's interesting that obviously what Daemon is doing is completely and utterly fucking over every little bit of hard work she's doing.
And also, side note, Damon's not really that good, right? Because what's Jace done? He's gone up to the north. He's got the strong men. He's got the
Veil.
twins. He's got what? Sorry.
He's got the veil. He went to Lady Jane,
Oh yeah, he
and
did go to. I thought that was that not
yeah.
Baylor, or was that?
So he Jace on his way to the north went up via the veil, was the one who negotiated with Lady Jane, then went to the north and did all of the Stark stuff, and now has gone down to the twins. And part of his deal with Lady Jane was to send up some dragons. So that's why Rhaena is up there with the Targaryen tots and the Targaryen baby dragons
Sorry, not
because
Raina.
of what Jace promised.
You mean
I
is it
mean
Bailey?
Rhaena,
You mean Raina?
because Baela's down
Yeah,
with
Raina.
Rhaemira flirting with
Yeah.
Jace,
Yep.
while
Yeah.
Rhaena is the cryy one with the long braids
Oh yeah,
who is.
you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, who is up with? I've had to like poet my way through all of these names now. So Rhaena Baela, Lena Lena, Rhaenys
And
Rhaena, Corvin.
I kind of like was it Jane Arryn is that was the lady there? She
Yeah,
was like such an Arryn, wasn't she? Like she
she
like that
was
was
such an Arryn.
yeah, that's good. It's good
And
acting.
I believe she's one of the first canonically lesbian characters that we've come across between Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon, which
Not according to
has
the
been a
mushroom,
long time
but
coming.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
we've
Well,
had.
the thing. Well, according to mushroom in the Fire and Blood, right now. Correct me if I'm wrong on this one, Max.
Mean,
It.
Mushroom's horny as fuck.
Well, yes,
What I
but
know.
mushroom said that that like her and Jace had a several day long. Like fuck session or something like
It's
that,
mushroom.
something crazy mushroom nonsense. They interject in the book all the time, just like yeah, he's probably making this one up, but we just included it for fun, pretty
Yeah.
much.
Well, also, did he like didn't Mushroom say that Jace like had sex with one of the Stark like
Yeah, no, that he
random
got
Stark's
married. He got secretly
sister?
married to Freegan's cis bastard sister or something, I
Yeah, like
think.
Mushroom
Sarah
just,
Snow.
I think Mushroom needed to earn enough money to pay for a whore and, just get it out of his
Yeah.
system. My
Or
gosh.
maybe Mushroom just wants to be in the book and he's just saying what
He's a fun guy, what can I say?
Oh, come on. I mean, the thing is with Jace is that like he does have a bit of charisma, right? Like he's got a bit of a swagger to him. So I suppose, you know, you I'm not saying I'm not like I'm not saying he did anything, but like you can see where like maybe some rumors might start spreading or something. He goes, you know, if he's very likable and very
Well, I saw
charming, then.
some fan theories after the first episode, after the Winterfell, that it was Jace and Cregan hooked up.
That's Tumblr. You've been back on Tumblr again, Max.
No, this is a TikTok fan cam or
Okay.
something. I mean, I'm not shocked by that because, they got
I
along.
saw those drawings too.
Was it A Song of Ice and Fire? Craig and Stark.
Yeah.
Jace. Jace Targaryen.
Some people were saying that it would have been not, like, I think in hindsight, like, some people were saying that they would have liked to have seen more Jason Krieg and Stark banter, you know, because apparently in Fire and Blood there's more like more of a friendship that bonds, and considering
Yeah,
that,
and Krieg comes back later.
that's
I would hope
I just
so.
thought, yeah, he felt like he was like a solid cast. I feel like I hope we do see more of him. You know, more of the lot. I one thing I really do like about this season is that we're seeing more of Westeros. That was one of the things
It's
that I
nice to
felt.
have more diversity.
Yeah, maybe we'll see some more places. Right, are
I
there?
did find it interesting just before we move on, that it, like in last episode, there was a lot of comparisons to the dragons as nukes and like releasing the nukes and like kind of taking exceptions for kind of unleashing weapons of mass destruction. And in this episode, with all of the negotiations between the different locations, like the Starks didn't ask for dragons, they asked for loyalty and support during. But the ones all in the south, so the Eyrie and the Towers and Harrenhal are all after dragons. So they've kind of you've had the proof of the nuclear power, and now we're in the arms race where every nation and every township wants their own dragon, and it's both defensive but also attacking. Like it's that the arms race is on now, and I just found that the allegory was kind of just adapting as. It would like it's the progression of if you've had the nuclear demonstration, you've had the nuclear proof, then everyone wants to purchase the weapons because if they don't have a dragon, then they are by default weaker.
Dragonless, yeah. I that's I'm
And so I'm enjoying that through line that I think will probably progress as the series progresses.
Yeah, especially I mean that was opened up in the first where they were doing the parade at the beginning, where it's like a dragon has been killed. You know, like there ha dragons have been fighting each other, and consequences have happened. That's shook people, obviously. And whereas, like, maybe the hope from the green side is that it's a show of strength, it's actually like a show of instability and weakness, because it kind of shows how dire times are. And also that, like, people might have felt rather safe in King's Landing because they're under the protection of dragons, which are basically invincible. Oh no, dragons are not invincible anymore. We're not safe anymore. Like, the genie's out of the bottle. So yeah, I like this.
I did really enjoy that parade because obviously, it shows if we're talking about Rhaenyra really. I think we mentioned last season that Rhaenyra seemed to have a disconnect from the people, which I think she still has a kind of disconnect from necessarily common folk, small folk. But she does have a really good political understanding, and I think Missandei is going to really help her get a better understanding of the small folk, and then having her on her council is really going to assist with that kind of underlying knowledge. But it's very clear that Christian, even though he is a commoner, was born a commoner, has really no political intelligence whatsoever to make the decision to parade like the. Look, we can dismantle a nuclear bomb. Look, we've got a nuclear bomb, and look, we've dismantled a nuclear bomb. Hey guys, guess what? A nuclear bomb can be dismantled.
Do you
Yay!
think it was Criston Cole's decision? Do you think it could have been Aemon's? It certainly wasn't the Hightower guy,
It
because he was like.
was Cole. I thought they implied that it was Cole, and he seemed to be like the only one that was like, this is a good idea. Let's do this.
He seemed relatively chipper. I maybe it was Aemon's idea, but I would hope Aemon would be slightly more on it. Because I feel like
Well,
Aemon
because
maybe, but it's hard to tell.
in season one, where Rhaenyra and Cole were chasing the stag or something, they came back with a hunting trophy, didn't they, in that one
The
episode?
war.
Yeah, that's it. So Criston Cole's kind of got that mentality of, well, last time I paraded a dead carcass through the streets, people were happy. So And of course, we saw.
I did enjoy the line from whoever the commoner was, who I think the merchant guy, the smith guy, saying, and the random guy was like, "I thought dragons were gods," and he's like, "No, it's just meat."
Yeah, I like that. I'm assuming he's
Doesn't
like
think
Hugh's
so.
apprentice or something. He's like, go, Master Hugh. Go, I thought them dragons was blooming invincible. Sorry.
Oh, your apples and pears, Governor. That dragon is dead, isn't it? It smells
Had his
like
head
real
knocked
bad.
off. Cool, blimey.
Poor blimey. I did enjoy the fact that as well he said, it's just meat, and then later on when they had the common folk fleeing King's Landing because they're starving, that they're like part of the chant was, "We want meat, we want meat." And you know these things are going to go hand in hand when we have the storming of the dragon pit. They're prizing dragons and they're prizing war and weapons of mass destruction more than the common people's basic needs like food and safety.
Could
So
in Fire and Blood, right, and the histories and all that, they the common folk storm the dragon pits, but it's generally assumed that it's out of a distaste towards the dragons, right? But could it possibly be the case that they're actually just they just want to eat the dragon? They're just doing it for food, like when they're sort of there.
Maybe.
That's a lot of
Don't you
food.
dragon? Dragon must not taste very nice, though.
Oh
Like,
no,
they're
probably not.
carnivores.
Yeah,
I
but
mean,
I
it
mean
is a
we're.
lot of meat, though. If you think about how much meat you can get out of a cow, can you imagine how much meat you can get out of, like, Vega? It's probably
Yeah.
very leathery and tastes like, you know, charcoal and
It might be their only
lizard,
option.
but. Yeah, that
And
could
it
be
might make
potentially
them
where they go. The
sick.
fact that they're
Is there a.
locking people in as well, they're locking people into King's Landing is an interesting choice.
Well, it's
That
the
doesn't seem
human
very
shield, isn't
sensible.
it? Because if everyone leaves King's Landing, then they can just have a square up dragon fight. So when Masario and others talk about how like the common people suffer as a result when dragons fight, I mean, you couldn't have it in a more stark example there.
The allegories aren't subtle. They are really well presented.
Absolutely. So I think the only bit we haven't really talked about much is Aemon's regency. Do I mean I don't I my suspicion is that Aegon's probably not going to make it. I'm getting like Robert Baratheon After the Hunt vibes with this. Like
I don't
maybe.
know, because I found it interesting that they scarred over one side of his face
Like
the
Viserys.
same way they did with Viserys, and I kind of talked about you jokingly said maybe Alicent will put the pillar over his head last podcast, and I think she might be tempted, but she won't, and I think it will follow a similar pattern to, again, Daemon Viserys. Aemond Aegon. I think he's going to be in bed, basically useless for a long time, being injured and malformed and weak, with slowly wearing down Alicent's even more resigned and weak psychology. Like, honestly, the scene in the Small Council where they said, "Well, he gets it because he's got a dick," and just watching the actress absorb that for like that was a long, slow pan in. It was like I was gonna get like a timestamp how long that slow pan in it worked, where like she's clearly like, "I'm so fucking mad because I let myself believe, like I imagined myself on the throne as Rhaenys said that I ought to. For the first time in my life, I thought that I'd get an inch."
Yeah,
And
I think, and it's
then
almost a
they
little bit
snatch it
of,
away.
it's almost like a bit of a realization of I'm on the wrong side.
I mean, like she I think she already had that realization when she realized that Aegon was a bit of a shit and really shouldn't have been on the crown. And then she had a secondary realization when she realized that she misinterpreted Viserys's words. And then she also knows, like Aemond in many ways is better than Aegon, but Aemond is angry and he is some like he's well shown, as she said, that he's sometimes thoughtless and acts rashly and acts out of a sense of vengeance rather than politically and solely. He's again in many ways more suited to being the king than Aegon is. He is
Oh.
also a reckless edge lord.
Like he's such an interesting character, like so many angles to him. He's obviously better educated.
Mostly the angle of his chin.
He's got a chin, isn't he? Quite. I think Alicent actually is scared of Aemond. I
Oh,
think
I would be. He's a
she
teenager with a nuke.
Is he, how old do you reckon he is? Did you reckon
I
he's
think he's meant to be like 19.
90? That is a dangerous age. I was doing some dumb shit at that age.
Yeah, like 19, 20.
I didn't, and I didn't have a dragon or nothing. I think Alicent saw the dagger, and I think she was like, "Oh shit, you didn't, did you?" She knows because she asked Cole about
Yeah,
it.
she knows.
Cole, why did you give the ominous answer? You just said, look, you said it with Aegon. It goes, Aegon, he fought valiantly. Clearly a lie, I guess. But maybe, it's all right. It's a plausible lie. Aemond, he also fought valiantly. Two lies. Why do you dodge the
Yeah.
second question?
Say hello to Australia when you get to the bottom of that hole. Like, keep digging, mate.
You could have, that was not a difficult pit to get out of. But the thing is, I quite like, I never thought I would be sort of endearing myself a little bit to Cole. Not that I'm saying he's a likable character, but I'm finding him very interesting. He has been scarred by the huge change of warfare type. Before, Cole had only ever known wars without dragons, I think.
Yeah,
And then he
well, the
sees
dry
the,
there's it's been peace in their time, so all of the skirmishes have been like little land fights, and he was a great soldier for his time, 15, 20 years ago, and now he's aging out of this new type of warfare. It's a whole other thing.
And he hasn't aged a day since the beginning of the show, really, has he?
Yeah, I mean
They could have
he's
given him
got the
some
gift
grey
of
hairs.
youth.
What wood witch has he been talking to? I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit of a bugbear. He looks a little bit older, but what's is it really that hard to put a few grey hairs in there? It's not
I
gonna.
did enjoy him cleaning his sword with lemon and salt,
Yeah, classic. Yeah.
because Dornish lemons, it's Dornishman,
Ah,
and
yes.
two, it's again in a similar way to Alicent's rituals of like cleansing for atonement and his like cleaning his cloak, cleaning his sword. He knows he's done wrong. He knows he done fucked up. He let the king be horrendously hurt. Not by his own fault, but he is bearing that responsibility. And it is that cleansing cycle once more of him like washing his hands of it, saying it wasn't me, saying like, blah 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 blah. In terms of you mentioned Aemond having the dagger, I mentioned in the last session that Alicent was looking for the paperwork that was belonged to Viserys and his research and the history and all that jazz. And maybe she'd find the like Easter egg book that Sam had in Game of Thrones.
Could
I'm
that be?
thinking that maybe when Aegon got rid of all those books and chucked them out, Aegon was like, "Yoink, for me, read, 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 read. Oh, Song of Ice and Fire, dagger is mine. Must kill my brother. Will be the sort of the prince that was promised." Like I
Could
wouldn't put it
oof.
past Aegon to have Aemond to have read the prophecy of the prince that was promised, and that was part of what drove him to attack his brother.
Do you think it's really written down in a book somewhere? I thought it was supposed to be like this big secret that was
I
passed from
mean, I
well,
think
air to
in
air.
there might be like riddles hidden in pages or something, because like Viserys had books and like he researched it. He was obsessed, and
I've
like
got a
I
theory
think
on that.
at the very least, Alicent's trying to prove Rhaenyra's story about the Song of Ice and Fire. So there must be some, like, some
So
version of it in his, like, in the paperwork.
that book that Samwell Tarly in Game of Thrones finds in the secret back end of the Citadel, which presumably I don't is that book is not written by Orwell, is it? No, I think it's written
No.
I can't remember. I'm
No,
not
it's
going to
written.
rewatch Game of Thrones to work out the evil,
Yeah.
like
Nah,
the like I'm not going to put myself through the suffering of that just for the sake of a book prop.
I think it's written by Septim something, or I don't know. But yeah, no, I for a minute there I thought, oh, could Orwell have written the book that is found at the back of the secret histories?
Orwell is one of the like primary sources used in Fire and Blood.
Okay.
Oh, nifty.
So he's I find him a very interesting character because like he almost seems to be like s desperate to stay out of it. Like he seems to, you know, like he's
Oh, yeah. I'm enjoying
but
that. He's smart enough to know the best course of action is just to get on with your homework.
yeah. I suspect my suspicion is I don't know about books and texts and things like that, but it could be the case that the prince that was promised is written in High Valyrian on the dagger, which Aemond might find out, and that might change something. You might read the, you know, because you know if you're with dragons or something, you could heat the dagger up,
One
maybe
sec.
because.
Here's a thought. If it's written on the dagger, Aegon was burned. He was wearing like he got into his entire body covered in fire and was heated while he had the dagger on his hip. And then we had Aegon retrieving the dagger. Was the dagger hot and glowing at the point where he retrieved the dagger off screen? And did he read it before Christian found him?
That is
Because
distinctly possible, but I gotta be
that
up.
would be potentially something that may have happened. It glows in the fireplace like the Ring of Power. The
That's.
dagger glows under the heat of dragon fire, and literally Aegon, Mother Hubbard, Aegon was literally set on fire.
That's interesting. The only reason I would doubt that, and I'm not saying it's outright not true, but the only reason I doubt that is I feel that it would be signaled a little bit more, because they don't do flashbacks in Game of Thrones, in House of the Dragon, per se. So it's not like if it was a show that did regular flashbacks, which I think is a silly plot device anyway. I think that I think that it might maybe. I mean, it certainly could be. It certainly I you know that. I th the thing is with Daemon, right? Aemond is that we know he's comfortable with High Valyrian. I'm assuming it's High Valyrian written on the dagger. I can't imagine what else it would be. There's the link. The link is there, right? Like he's inches. He's holding the message in his hand. So it'd be interesting to see if he gets either close to finding it, or has found it. You know,
Yeah, talking of Valyrian steel and Valyrian weaponry as well. So Aegon was wearing Valyrian steel armor. Do we think that conducts heat? Because like I think there's mentions of like Valyrian steel like being warm to the touch even in winter, even in the north. And so did he get more badly injured because he was wearing Targaryen Valyrian steel armor when he was burned? Like, it was just one of those interesting things where like they mentioned like he was wearing Valyrian steel when they're like prizing it off his flesh. And I was like in my brain I assumed that Valyrian steel would be more fire resistant because that kind of makes more sense to me. And like it's a very hard thing to temper and it's a very hard thing to manipulate. But would it can just basically act as a conductor and the heat flows through it so it wouldn't be damaged by fire? But would make the injuries more severe. It was something that I was pondering. I just wanted an opinion on. Also, the gore effects, top notch.
Yeah, they were.
Gross.
They
Like
didn't
they
hold
really went to
back.
town between the Dragon's
No.
Scale in Game of Thrones, Viserys last season, and this season's gore effects for all of the burn. It's phenomenal
Viserys
work.
last season was
Icky.
crazy.
I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I remember correctly, in the book, they in Fire and Blood, they say that the armor was literally fused into Aegon's skin and they couldn't remove it or something like that. So I think that was a change that made sense because it doesn't really,
I do wonder
that
though,
wouldn't
one
really
of the things that
happen in real life.
did confuse me is why they didn't send any maesters to Aegon. Why did they bring him all the way up to the Red Keep, potentially days away, weeks away, rather than sending some maesters to him? I can understand they're trying to keep it discreet to hide the severity of his injuries, but like if the first few hours are essential, which they are for burn victims. For burn victims, the first couple of hours or like the first minutes are essential. Like getting someone, like cooling the injuries are essential for burn, like survivability. And there's like stats to do with like the initial cooling period. The longer you have the initial cooling period and the more extended the initial cooling period will seriously affect the prognosis of burn victims. There's been like stats about like someone who was put under cold water for 15 minutes versus someone who's put under the water for an hour, and like the prognosis is completely different and the survivability and the scar tissue is completely different. So why was there like no one treating him on the battlefield or like setting up a tent there? Like I like as far as I know, Rook's Rest is a while away. It took like it's in the Crownlands. Like they the dragon was a long time in dying, but they managed to bundle up the king, put him in like basically a coffin, and then slowly walk him up the Red Keep before getting a maester to him. Wouldn't it have been quicker to shove a maester on a horse and gallop the maester to him? Like I found it a little bit confusing from a logic standpoint.
Now my suspicion, here's me filling in the logic gaps. Tell me if this makes
Okay,
any
please
sense. Okay.
do.
So
Give me some
Rook.
logic. Give me imperfect answers.
Okay, let's I mean we do know that there are like George writes in some inconsistencies with some of the sciencey stuff anyway. But looking at the map, Rook's Rest is a pro well, it's nearer to King's Landing than Dragonstone as the crow flies, and you'd still have to go around Driftmark if you were sailing in. So we often see in a now I don't know whether or not would ships be traveling faster than land, that isn't traveling. I don't know how fast ships travel in Game of Thrones. But anyway, the distance I but also what is interesting is that Harrenhal isn't that much further than Rook's Rest, maybe an extra 20% on the journey or something. But I suppose, like, I would imagine that on the battlefield there is some kind of medic, whether or not it's Silent Sisters or Combat Maesters or something like that. You
There's got
know,
to be someone.
yeah, there'll be squires with medical training. There'll be something there to like keep him tided over. They probably shifty. I don't. Yeah, and the thing is, I don't know. Like, I mean, I maybe we're overthinking it, but they're taking the head off, which is going to take a while anyway. And maybe.
Presumably, I don't know what they did with the body of Sunfire. Did they bury it? Did they like? As far as I'm aware, the bones of Targaryen dragons are usually kept. So did they burn it and then keep the bones? Like I feel like it's just a couple of unanswered questions to do with the logistics of the first scene,
Yeah, I
which I
mean,
would like answered.
I would say just on sort of gut feelings, estimates, vibes from the show and all that kind of stuff, I still would say that it's like 2 days away, which is still a long time.
It's a
And
long
that
time,
would
particularly as Orwell specifically says the line about the first hours are essential. Like, unless they've developed the Game of Thrones jetpack, which I'm really hoping they haven't, because I don't want that shit in this show. It seems weird that they would throw in that line. Unless they said like the first couple of hours of intensive treatment are essential, or like they could have thrown in like the battlefield medic didn't have the appropriate knowledge now that we are at the keep. You don't necessarily want that clunky exposition, but
He
it would
wasn't
have
flown back on Vermithor.
Do you mean
Vhagar, sorry. Yeah,
Vhagar? I was
Vhagar.
going to say Vermithor was the other
Vermithor.
side.
Yeah. I'm terrible with
Is
dragons.
Vermithor dead?
Yeah, that's Rhaenys' one, right?
No, Rhaenys
No,
is Meleys.
back
Vermithor,
to.
no, I think is alive but unclaimed, if
Vermithor is
I'm
unclaimed.
remembering.
Okay. Is Vermithor one of the original? One of the first three?
Or am I misremembering?
I
I'm
feel like
looking it up now.
Vermithor is one of the really big old
No,
ones.
yeah, Vermithor is alive and
It's Jaehaerys's,
unclaimed at the moment.
Yeah. At the moment, we shall see.
And it what it is he was a Jaehaerys's dragon, the old king.
And so has not had a rider for a very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So it'd
Black,
be in.
yeah.
I don't. Who gets that one then? Is it gonna be? Is it gonna be? Oh.
Rayna or Alan, Alec,
Ulf. Oh, Ad. Alan and
Alan
or
and
Adam. Well, I think.
yeah.
I think Adam. Which is the one that never smiles? The bald one.
Adam,
That's
Alan.
Alan. Yeah, Alan.
Update
I think he's going
the
to
character
be
map, Game of Thrones people. Update the character map. I need some
updated.
help.
I think Alan is going to be the heir to Driftmark. I
Was
think I.
interesting because we haven't mentioned Corlys yet. And the fact that Corlys finally was like, Baela, you're a woman, but you're also my daughter. Even though my wife has been trying to convince me for like 10 years
Granddaughter.
that I would, well, my last living descendant, I should actually, if I question the lineage of my grandsons, maybe I should actually choose my granddaughters who I know are true born. My wife has been asking me for this for years. She's dead. Oh, you're, one sec, you could be an heir. And she's like, no.
No thanks.
Wasn't the po wasn't like Corlys's plan to basically marry into the Targaryens anyway, like to effectively have the Valyrians just become the Targaryens, like just
Well, yeah, that was his
smush them
idea
in?
with Laenor, and that, Laenor and Rhaenyra's children would be,
Yeah. Well, so basically he'd agreed to claim, even though the bastards were quite obvious, he was agreeing to claim the bastards from Rhaenyra because they held the Valyrian name. Even though Rhaenys was like, hey dude, they're clearly bastards, why don't you choose your daughters? You keep saying I should have been queen, and then you're not willing to lay your stakes on a female heir. What the fudge? And then he conceded to Jace after the betrothal was it before or after the betrothal was agreed between Lucerys and Lena, yeah, not Lena, Rhaena. I can't remember. I have to rewatch season one whether or not it was before or after the betrothal was agreed that he. I think he was still choosing to make Luke his heir even before the betrothal between Luke and Rhaena was agreed. So he was still favoriting, like he was still choosing a male bastard over a female trueborn. And then he kind of somewhat gets his wish because then they were married. They were betrothed. So he would have gotten his wish of a male heir, and then their offspring would have been trueborn with the Valyrian bloodline. But that was more happenstance than his initial goal. He just wanted it, the name. and the supposed legacy over the genetics, unlike his brother, who was all about the genetics. Oh no, we lost a Max.
Oh, we lost a Max.
So yeah, I find it interesting that, like, it's a classic, like, you don't know what you got till you're gone. And I like there was a throwaway line from Baylor about, like, all these years, like, I wish I'd seen you in your prime when you had all of these treasures and golds and everything like that. And like, I know that it was all secretly, you were just trying to please your wife and impress your wife, which is a lovely sentiment. But equally, I can imagine Rhaenys in the background being like, dude, I didn't care about that shit. You could have been home being a grandfather, and instead you were off going on doing wars, getting yourself sick, trying to make yourself
Gallivanting.
impressive. You weren't doing it for me. You think you were. You think you were doing it to impress me, but you weren't. You were not here when I needed it. And I could just hear like the angel on his shoulder being like, no. Like, you could have been home. But yeah, like, it's a perfect, like, for the grief cycle that was shown, he was being a very stoic man who wasn't crying. The grief cycle was very much a like, don't know what you got till you gone type scenario, which I enjoyed. And the fact that he was just like, yeah, Baylor, you can be my heir now because I've got no other choice. And she's like, no, I'm actually gonna be a Targaryen. Why didn't you choose my sister all these years?
He might go with Rhaenyra.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, he, like, she's literally his only choice unless he decides to legitimize one of the bastards, which is perfectly possible now. He's not gonna have the equivalent of Catelyn Stark being like, kill the bastard, because Rhaenys is gone. I'd be interested to also know what happened to, like, so we know what happened to Maelys's body. We don't know what happened to Sunfire's body and whether or not that's being held off screen for an Ex Machina in the future, or whether or not it was the bones have been taken. And we don't know what happened to Rhaenys's body, or whether or not she was, dishonorably, like, her body was dishonorably kind of buried or burnt. Or whether or not, in the same way, like, Ned's bones were respectively sent all the way up to Winterfell, all the way from King's Landing. His bones were escorted. There was a whole ceremony for Ned's bones, the Hand of the King. I feel like, Princess Rhaenys, the queen that never was, a dragon rider princess, even if it's she's a on the wrong side of the war, I feel like her bones should be given some level of respect. So I'll be interested to see whether or not Corlys actually gets a chance to grieve, if and when her remains are dealt with, or whether or not, I wouldn't put it past Crispin to be the petty sort of son of a gun to be like, yeah, just burn the bitch.
I don't know. I can see it going either way. I can see Kristen being sort of horrified by war and offering some sort of deference, but at the same time, he does seem to be rather mercenary when it comes to matters of life and death, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
It almost feels like flip a coin. My suspicion is it's not consequential enough to the events that they just didn't show it for time reasons and what have you,
Yeah.
I guess. It might have just lacked plot
If we
relevance,
get
to be
an
honest.
answer, I'd like it. If we never get an answer, I'm not gonna grieve it too much. And the last of my notes was just, there's multiple characters saying, I feel so useless, I feel so helpless, I feel like I ought to be doing stuff, but I am held back by my position or my status or my gender. And we've had that repeatedly, and that's something that's been running for a while. They highlighted it a lot with this episode, with like Jace feeling like he can't do anything, and then, he's done a good thing, he's done the negotiating and he did it really well, but he still left the safety of the keep and potentially put himself in danger, and he is the heir. And same with Rhaemyra, like, at some point she's going to have to do the fighting because she has the strongest dragon other than Daemon, and she's trying to be independent from Daemon because she doesn't think he's reliable. So at some point she's probably going to have to go into battle as the queen, but until that point she's being treated like a figurehead and a flower and a woman. And that's again holding her back because of Gender politics. Oh, the show's about gender politics? Who would
Ooh.
Oh, is there issues because of sex in this thing? Oh, what
Absolutely,
about it? But yeah, so they put that in. They put the subtext into text. This episode with that, and then obviously you've got, Aegon and Aemond showing what happens when you are reckless and you just go in because you're bored and you've got, what was the brilliant line from Rhaenys in season one, where it's like they've got, blood is green,
Something.
something green as grass and balls of something.
They're as green as grass with balls full of seed or something like that.
Yeah. And like it's like we've got the kind of the characters that are holding back and trying to make sensible decisions versus the ones who are letting themselves just like letting their ego and id just go mad. And we're kind of starting to see those consequences a little bit. So Daemon obviously is just he is pure ego and id. He is just pure like he just wants to like he is egotistical and he wants to. He wants quick solutions and he's willing to do bad things to get them. Again, I don't know how much of that is his inhibitions are down because of magical drugs or whatever, or whether or not that is not what he would have done if he wasn't under the influence. Because he is a complicated character. But obviously, Aemond and Aegon making dumbass decisions to go out in battle. And yeah, we've got Jace making actually sensible decisions along with Rayna, not Rayna, Baela and Rhaemyra trying to stay home and do the work.
So yeah, and of course, like, we that links in with of course Alicent being literally like powerless, how like I mean
Just
the
as I said, that one shot. Panning in on her was just,
very good.
oh, so
And
good.
also it's worth noting, of course, is that the two people on that council meeting who she's had sexual liaisons with have both basically failed to have her back, which I think sort of indicates Laris Strong and
Oh,
Kristen
yes, sorry,
Cole.
I forgot Laris for a minute. I forgot Laris. I mean, Master of Spies, he does slip into the background. But yeah, like the
He
fact that both of
slips
them are
into the
like,
background like he slips his hand into his trousers. Sorry, that's fucking
yeah.
gross.
It's late, it's fine. But yeah, I completely forgot about him. But yeah, and like I do like the fact like how much of his siding against her is calculation and how much of it is kind of petty jealousy because she's clearly having actual sex with Kristen, and how much of it is him trying to manipulate the crown, and how much of it is him actually wanting Aegon in power. Like, all of those questions can be yes or can be like part of the whole.
My suspicion, I think I might have said this before, but the more I think about it, the more I come down on the side of I don't think Laris is jealous. I think he kind of he had his
He wants
opportunity to sort of
Aegon.
he yeah, like with Laris, he
Him.
it's a power th the sex was linked to the power thing. So I don't think it's an emotional thing. I think it's more of a Yeah, like a power trip for him. And I think that that doesn't necessarily, like, I don't think Kristen Cole kind
Comes into the field. He also, like,
exactly,
if we talk about intelligence and, like, again, where's the power reside with the king, with the rich man, with the person with the sword, or with the person who has the secrets? Like in terms of actual political power, even though Kristen is hand of the king and head of the king's guard, like Laris can run circles around him in terms of like actual like political intelligence, and so. I don't think he's too worried about him from a political standpoint, other than the fact that because he's not very politically intelligent, he'll be reckless.
I think the arguments they made were legit. Like
Oh yeah. Like
Aegon's
how can they
claim.
say that they're gonna have a female regent when their whole claim is staked on the fact that dicks are better.
They've got the yeah. So, you know, they are staking their claim on male privilege, and thus, yeah, can't be seen to underwrite that. Despite the fact, of course, that King's brother. Now, you could make the argument that was it the surviving Jahira.
Well, I think this is another reason why they cut out the third child. So I think they really wanted to have it a question, like I think in terms of in a similar way as to why they decided to seemingly kill Sunfire. It cuts out part of the question. If you're going to add another level of complexity, it cuts out the question of whether or not Rhaenys died in victory. Because you can have that victory even though you're adding the complexity of Aemond being in on the play. I feel like cutting out the third child from Helena and Aegon's relationship means that it cuts out the next question of who's in line to the throne. Is it the brother or is it the son? If it's the son, there still needs to be a regent because the son is too young, because that, like, a younger child than the one who was killed, and I can't remember their name. There's too many names. Like, would be definitely would need a regency anyway. But like, it cuts out that question entirely if you just don't have if the only direct descendant is female, then of course it goes upwards. In the, like, and again, if we're talking parallels between Viserys Daemon and Aegon and Aemond, it helps reiterate that parallel once again. That the only direct descendant from the chosen king is a woman, therefore it goes to the brother.
And it's the
Girl.
So yeah, totally. I mean, so there is almost no reason why it should be anyone other than Aemond, right? Because yeah, you've got the male line argument, which can be debated, but when you combine that with the fact that he's a regent, he's the king's brother, he's probably a show of strength rather than Alicent, who would be a
He's also like the argument with Alicent when Viserys was in power was alive was that the kids were too young. Like you could argue that Aemond and Aegon were too young, therefore they needed a regent until they were old enough to step into power. And number two, because Viserys was still alive, she was regent only insofar as practice, not as a figurehead. If that makes sense, she had the role of regent, she made the decision as regent. But if Viserys then stood up, which he did, and said, actually, no, I'm the king, what I say goes, she doesn't actually hold that power because she's not the actual figurehead, she's not the actual head of state, she's not the true regent. She wouldn't have been named regent, they would never have called her Queen Regent. They would have called her Queen Alicent, and she would have been acting regent. Like, she would have done the paperwork, the admin, and the actual decision-making as regent, in that she would have said, I've gone to talk to Viserys. Viserys told me this. This is his will. I've translated his will. Please do as I say. But if he'd then contradicted her, he still had the power while he is gone. So she doesn't have any claim to authority. So unless Aegon comes to some level of consciousness, is unable to do like, there, this is my whispered will. I'm actually the true king. Whisper, 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 whisper. And then she can be that voice box for the true king. And then she could theoretically get back into the position as acting regent. But even then, she would not be named regent. She would be named Queen Mother and then just do the admin. She wouldn't get the title. She wouldn't have the authority. Well, she'd have the authority in purpose, but not the authority in name. Does that make sense?
And also I
Sometimes I
think
go off on
there's
a really long sentences and I'm like, did that actually make any sense?
It did, but I think also one thing is that there is a difference to the wife of the king queen versus the mum of the king
Of the king,
of the
yeah.
king queen. So I don't so it's because in one circumstance I think she was queen consort, and then in the last
And
episode
now
she
she's
was
Dowager.
dowager queen. Yeah, so I suppose having your mum show up at work because you're, I don't want to say pulling a sickie,
Yeah,
but
he got burnt half. Like he's like a full, like, well done barbecue. He's pulling a sickie.
So yeah. Oh yeah.
I do, in terms of another gender, like one of the few gender references that's not yet really been tapped into yet, that I wouldn't be shocked if they were to break up in the next couple of episodes, is the reduced authority for women as they age. And that's something that I know, I believe comes up in the books, where they like say, oh, Rhaenyra got fat and therefore she is less worthy as a leader because women can't be fat. She's had lots of babies and she gets fat and ugly and therefore she's lesser. And that's one of the things that goes around in the books. While Alicent's thin, so she's better. And so I've got, they might go into like, once you become the Queen Dowager, once you become older, your value is lessened. And I wouldn't be shocked if they potentially go into that with Alicent, particularly like, presumably she could remarry, but I don't think she would be allowed to remarry given the context. Like, I think probably what they'd have to do is they'd have to, like, the rest of the political strength would have to be really, really strong for the Queen Dowager to remarry, because then that creates another kind of, again, in the incest spaghetti that is the House of Dragon,
Well,
potentially another offshoot. Like,
yeah, but
it just complicates things.
it does complicate things. But Viserys had Alicent as a wife after his first wife, I think. Is it Emma
Yeah,
Targaryen?
it was Emma Baratheon.
Emma Arryn.
Oh, Emma Arryn. I thought, oh no, her mother was a Baratheon, or her parent, one of her parents was a Baratheon, because in the books she's actually got dark hair. They decided to give her Targaryen blonde hair to really highlight Rhaenyra's bastards. But yeah, which is part of the argument why in the books they're like, her children were born dark haired, but actually her mother was dark haired. Maybe they're not bastards. But obviously they made it even more blatant in House of the Dragon by the more diverse casting choices that they decided to make, which I still enjoy very much, because it really does, it makes the deception even harder to prove.
Hang on a minute. Now I'm missing something here. Emma Arryn looked like a Targaryen, right? She had all the hallmarks of a Targaryen, but she was an Arryn. Now, if, sorry, did you say one of her parents was a Baratheon?
I think she's a cousin. I think she's a Targaryen cousin.
Okay,
Again,
God, man, this,
there is
yeah.
multiple, like, again, it's incest spaghetti. Like, all of the, like, the checks and balances of the Targaryen genetic, like, hodgepodge. Like, I don't, like, and then they decide to name each other all the similar names. Like, there should be like there's a tongue twister out of the names. Like Lena, Lenor, Bela, 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 Lena, Rayna, Rhaenys, Corlys, Rhaemyra, Aegon, Aemond, Helena, Jace, Luke, Joffrey. I've cracked it for the most part, with occasional fudge ups, but like, my gosh. And then if you take into account the genetics, I'm surprised that only some children were born with six fingers.
Well, I don't. I think the book fluffs that one, aren't there?
The children of Helena and Aegon have six fingers.
That's the one.
Um,
That's what I'm
but I'm
thinking of.
surprised there's not more. I'm surprised there's not more. Yeah, but that's all my notes, and those were my very HUD quickly written notes that I did in the 10 minutes before we started the stream.
Well, I appreciate your ever ongoing diligence to the house. The Ours Is the Theory extended universe or whatever. So yeah, I
I
think
promise
that's.
to try and do slightly more better
Don't
next
you've
time.
got no obligation to you do whatever suits. Don't let even if we just come here and chat shit for however long, it's all good. I don't want you to feel like you have to do any work or anything for this.
Yeah,
It's
well, like I like the breakdown and I like seeing the patterns. I would be interested, just as a small side note, because it was something that it was visually queued up. And we haven't really had much from Helena recently, but Helena just had that throwaway line to Aemond at the end where she says, "Was it worth it?"
She knows.
Well, she knows, but like, what does she know? Just I like Helena's such a wonderful little like mystery box of a character where I'm like, how much does she know? What does she know? Is it just intuition? Is it insight? Is it green dreams? Like, has she like? Is it just about the fact that she knows that Aemond is responsible for Aegon's condition? Or does she know something about the dagger? Does she know something about the Song of Ice and Fire? Is she still just a traumatized little being who needs a hug but doesn't want it because physical contact is hard? Like, she's like the best of the greens.
She is, yeah. We should rescue her.
Yeah, let's go and kidnap
Oh.
Helena. Like, come, I've got bugs you can look after.
So I'm quite looking forward to how this is setting up for next week. I'm looking forward to some dragon seed plot progression. That's what I want to see.
Yes.
I want to see fucking Ulf on a dragon. Like that's gonna be some light-hearted stuff, I reckon. I reckon that, and
You
I'm
want a
so
How to
glad.
Train Your Dragon moment.
Yeah, it's gonna be some How to Train Your Dragon moments. I think Adam's gonna take a shot at it. I think that'd be a good laugh. I think maybe next episode. I don't know if we'll see any big actions or new battles or anything like that because they usually set them up a little bit unless there's something that sideswipes us. But I suspect it'll be like a setup episode for then. So what is the next episode? So at the moment we're on episode
I think probably next episode they're gonna
five.
have a couple of like sort of either mini montages or like segmented scenes where Rhaenyra is disappointed that she can't trace the line, there's no Targaryens that she can find legitimately through the like searching the archives, and she's disappointed and she thinks that they're never gonna succeed, and maybe they have like a minor defeat, like one of the lords sends a notice saying they're not going to support her claim anymore. And then maybe something happens with Daemon where he does something stupid and she's just really defeated. And then at the end of the episode, we have that shot from the trailer of Rhaenyra and Syrax on the beach opposite whatever Laenor's dragon was called.
See
Sea
smoke,
Smoke.
I
Seasmoke
think,
and Seasmoke's new rider, and I think that like either that will be a shot just before an advert break, or will be the shot to end the episode next episode. That's my prediction because it is like visually very beautiful. I feel like that would be a great way to be like a land shot where you can't see who the dragon rider is, you can just see the dragon. And then the next scene or the next episode begins with like the conversation where she's again because like when Seasmoke is claimed, that's gonna raise so many questions for Rhaenyra regarding like what happened to Laenor, and I want to see that because that spicy drama that we've been looking forward to for like a whole season at this point, like since what episode 5 of season 1 or whenever it was that Laenor died.
I think he's gone. I think
I think he is gone. I think he's been
he's
gone
gone.
since Seasmoke's been restless. But that's Rhaenyra doesn't know that. And so until he's reclaimed, I want to see her like, oh no. Like it's beautiful, spicy drama, and occasionally like this show needs some proper dramatic, like some just a like a sprinkling of melodrama. And I think
Absolutely.
that'd be super duper fun, particularly if she gets some like shitty word from Damon and she's like, I miss Lena. Lena always was kind to me. And
Yeah,
maybe at the
Lane.
point where she's thinking, I miss him, I wish he was here to support me, it would have been like, I wouldn't be shocked if she like tried to reach out to Lena to be like, hey, I know I've beat you to death, but do you want to come over and ride a dragon? Maybe help me with my war just a little bit. You know, your mom's dead, but your dad's still here. Maybe you can like come back home. And then doesn't get a response. And then she thinks he's coming back because Sea Smoke is behaving weirdly. And then it's not him. Like just drama. Like, just give me that.
I can't wait. This is, I mean, this is the best season of any kind of like Game of Thrones thing for a long fucking
Oh
time.
yeah, I
So
mean
I'm watching
yeah,
for
I keep on saying like I was having a conversation with one of the other guys in my D&D group, and he was like, oh god, I can't bring myself to watch House of the Dragon because like Game of Thrones burned me so badly. And once again I say
that.
like House of the Dragon is so healing in comparison to Game of Thrones. Like it's so good, and it every time it like it answers the problems that House of the Dragon that Game of Thrones had. Like it answers the gender perspective, which was so shoddily handled, particularly in the later seasons in Game of Thrones. And it answers the diversity question, which was so limited, if even breathed upon, in the original show. And then it sticks to what it did so well, which is compelling stories about the human heart in conflict with itself, but with cool ass dragons.
I like how
Not elf
sparing their
dragons.
I like how sparing they're being with the dragons. I do happen to know that they're quite expensive in terms of a CGI budget,
Oh yeah.
but you know, you've got to keep your powder dry, right? Dragons aren't special if you throw them about in every episode, right? You gotta do once, maybe
And they
twice a
look
season,
so
really.
good.
They
They
are
look
very good.
so good. And like I love the diversity within the dragon designs while still feeling like they're from the same universe. And like their different characterizations, like Vhagar feels like a grandma. Syphax seems like a relatively cool, chill dragon. And yeah, what's famous dragon called again? Caraxes is just a crazy noodle, and I love it. And to be honest, actually, the one dragon I really want to see that we haven't seen on screen is Dreamfire. I really
We
want to see Dreamfire do some, because honestly, I want Helena to go for a cathartic dragon ride.
Oh my God,
Helena,
we've not seen Helena on a
we've
dragon,
never
have
seen
we?
Helena on a dragon, and she's a dragon rider. And like, I want her to get some good, healthy time with her support dragon.
That's, yeah.
I want her to get some time with her support dragon. Like, does her dragon look like some sort of insect? Have they like designed Dreamfire to look slightly insectoid? Like, or like a dragonfly? Like, I want to see Dreamfire because like that could be such an interesting design if we're talking about dragons like mimicking personalities. Like, imagine if like Dreamfire's got sort of iridescent wings like a moth or a butterfly. Like,
That'd be quite
that would
cool,
be so cool. And honestly, Helena needs a freaking break.
Yeah,
Like, let
she is.
her go for a little poodle on her dragon.
Oh, the thing is, though, right? I know exactly how they'll do it, right? Because, like, they have made Helena a tragic character, and to be honest, in hindsight, and maybe this is a legit criticism, is that they could have shown her in more positive, given her moments of light to contrast against the darker moments that we always seem to see her going through. You know, she always seems to be constantly suffering in one way or another, and like, but there would be moments where she spends with Dreamfire that I'd imagine she'd probably be quite happy. Oh, do you know what? They won't do this, but I'll tell you what would be fucking cool is if she walked into the dragon. If she walked into, instead of riding Dreamfire, she walked into Dreamfire.
Oh, can you imagine having dragon dreams when inside the dragon? Like, can you imagine it walking into your dragon while your dragon is asleep and sharing their dreams? That would be a cool way of doing dragon dreams slash green dreams. Because I'm trying to think, is Old Town, is Old Town Andals, or is Old Town First Men? I feel like Old Town will be Andals, not First Men,
the
so she wouldn't have green seer blood necessarily.
Old Town. Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know.
I feel like Old Town is one of the first places that the Andals landed. I don't think she'd have green seer blood, but I mean, like, we don't really even know that much about Dragon Dreamers, but I want to see her with, like, on it, one of my favorite D&D characters I've ever had. She was a ranger, so she had a pet panther. And I used that pet panther as her, like, support animal. And I really want Helena to spend some time with her support dragon. I think she could do with booping that snoot and just chilling out in the dragon pit with her lizard friend until her mum comes looking for her and she goes back to her misery business. And probably what they'll do, as you said, is if she's a tragic character, they'll probably introduce Jean Moonfire in the episode that Helena dies or something. Like in the same way they put Kara's character in Buffy in the opening credits in the episode where they shoot. It's her first and only time in the credits is the episode that they kill off the character. I can see that, like, we finally get introduced to Dreamfire on the episode that they, like, kill off Helena.
The
That
second
would be
the episode that you see Helena crack a smile, ride the dragon with any kind of joy, it's over for her. Signed,
yeah,
sealed, you know.
she's dead. She's dead. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't stop,
Just
pass, go. Don't pick up 200 pounds.
I gotta be honest. I think the one criticism I will level at this is that I would have liked to have explored Helena a bit more as a character, maybe at the expense of the there were really long shots with Damon, and
Yeah, I
I
mean,
liked I liked it, but
I hope in the next episode we have some serious progression with that plot, because I really appreciate it, and like I really appreciate Matt Damon, Matt Smith. I'm tired as an actor and everything he's doing with the character, and I'm hoping that there will be some significant payoff, but like it's hard to describe, like. Don't
I
think it's
think
necessarily slow. I just feel like because it's so intangible, it's hard to get a grip on what they're trying to do with it. And that's
well
why it feels very frustrating, because it feels like there's no progression. It didn't feel like a slow build up where like you had like a couple of shots where he was sort of maybe hallucinating, but you weren't really sure, or you kind of he saw a servant who he thought looked like someone and then it wasn't. And then the next episode, it's like more kind of overt. And then by the third episode, you have like full, fever dream moments where he's losing time. So it feels like the progression, because in the first episode where they introduced this, they had like crazy F off visions. And then it's continued. Like he hasn't got better and he hasn't got worse. And because
I
we haven't had
think
an outside perspective to be like, you're now wackadoo saying that to him. That's why I think it feels so stagnating, is because it doesn't feel like there was a cool progression within the magic or the illness or anything like that that kind of makes it feel like it's moving forward.
I also think given the lack of that progression, I think it gets, in particularly this episode, a disproportionately large amount of screen time.
Yeah.
Which could have been probably better spent with one of the other characters. I think that's really it. They could have told that exact same chunk of story. There were good bits in that story, even within that bit. But as you say, if they dialed
Yeah.
down the surrealness a little bit, or they just condensed it a little bit more, so it felt a bit more like brisk, or not even brisk, just not so dragging.
Yeah.
Then
Like more
maybe,
time with
but.
Helena, a little bit more time with the Aemond.
Maybe a little bit more
A
time
little
in the Eyrie with Rayna.
Yeah, like a little like probably a little bit more time with Corliss as well, like actually kind of maybe getting some progression through his grief rather than kind of stoic shock.
Or maybe he could delight us with one of his many anecdotes of his adventures on the high seas, you know? They used to do that all the time in Game of Thrones. It's like, do you know what? Story time with some random character. Yeah, I'm all
Every
right, you
time,
know?
like
Corliss has got some
it
good
could have
stories.
like I would love to see him like get drunk and see sing a sea shanty about the woman in the sky or
Oh,
something like that.
with Podrick and Jenny of Oldstone kind of thing.
Yeah, but
That
like,
was a
he's drunk and he's mourning and, having like a sea shanty in the rhythm of a Game of Thrones song, but about the woman who soars above me in the clouds that I'll never get to meet or something like I think that could be really sweet and interesting and a good way of like getting the insight into the character that's kind of not too overt, but like you get the emotion of it. I don't know. I'm just coming up with ideas. And I'm, it's 1:30 at night.
Hey Max,
don't know.
have we got you
I
back?
shouldn't be a writer.
You got me
Got
back.
Max back.
I'm so sorry. I had a crazy, just a whole assortment of crazy things just happened to me, but
All
it
right.
was my day now.
Are you all right? Did anyone kill your dragon?
No, a cat. There's a thunderstorm. My power went out, and a cat showed up on my back balcony, which is like 10 feet off the ground. So I have no idea how that happened. And then, like, what do we do with this cat? And then the owner showed up. So it's all good.
You
Sorry to
found Mr.
derail
Pounce
everything.
or Prince Pounce. You
Yes,
found Prince
Prince
Pounce.
Pounce. Yes,
Prince Pounce.
Me and Chris have been wrapping up for about half an hour of me going, oh, but one more thing. But one more thing. I was just saying that callers should get drunk and sing a sad sea shanty to grieve his beautiful, wonderful wife, in a cathartic and emotional manner.
Yes, as she deserves. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts on the episode, Max, before we wrap up? Any hopes for next week?
My hopes for next week is that we get to see the dragon seeds try to ride the dragons. That's really what I'm looking forward to
Yep.
right
Get some
now.
Ulf, get some Hugh the Hammer.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be a nettle somewhere. Who knows? Oh,
Yeah.
get Alan.
Yeah, let
Get
on a
it.
dragon as well. Come
Yeah.
on.
Awesome, cool.
Right.
All right, well, that seems like a good place to wrap it up. So thank you very much for joining us, folks at home, and we'll see you next week. Toodaloo.
Bye.